My name is Kathy High, and I'm interviewing today with Kayla Coldsnow, who's a PhD biology student at RPI in her fourth year, and she's studying ecology. And she's also been volunteering and organizing workshops at Nature Lab. So we're really happy to have you here today with us, Kayla. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask you a few questions about your work with, you work with Lake George and the Jefferson Project. Can you just explain to people what that project is about and what your involvement is with that?
Yeah, so the Jefferson Project, it's a collaboration between IBM, RPI, and a funding agency, the Fund for Lake George. And the whole point of that is to try to make Lake George one of the smartest lakes in the world and understand global issues that are affecting all freshwater, but being able to focus in on Lake George and eventually give this to the world to use and understand.
So what does it mean to make a lake smart? Isn't a lake smart already?
Yeah, so I'm not involved as much with that part of it. That's more IBM side, but they're adding a whole bunch of sensors onto the lake that can talk to each other and measure a whole bunch of stuff. And then they're taking all of this millions of data points and making it into a big model so that they can understand what's going on.
Cool. Great. And so you've been looking at this situation with Lake George and through the Jefferson Project. What effects do you see that humans have on the environment and vice versa? You know, how are you studying that?
Yeah, so a lot of the things that we study in the lab that I work in are kind of issues to Lake George, but also like global issues. And a couple of them are like road salt, like when we apply salt to our roads to protect them, it rushes off into the freshwater ecosystems and increases the salt in those. And the freshwater organisms don't really like that very much, and then you have consequences from that. We also look at things like invasive species, which are species that aren't from around here, but end up getting here through things like shipping crates, and then they end up becoming prolific in their environment and having a consequence there. And we look at things like nutrients, like from agriculture and fertilizers that you apply to your lawns and stuff, and understand what's going on there as well.
So that's a lot of different areas. That's really amazing. How do you think that some of these things affect our ecosystem? Like, you know, I'm an advocate of getting rid of pesticides, for example. What would happen if we just eliminated all pesticides?
Yeah, so a lot of the time, the things that humans are doing to the ecosystems, it's feeding the things that people don't even know about. So the things are like the zooplankton, the little guys that swim around in the water and eat up all the algae. A lot of times you're either feeding the algae directly or you're killing the thing that eats the algae. And that's when you have the big algal blooms like Lake Erie sees a lot of the time. Mm. And so while it's nice to think about stopping pesticides completely or stopping road salt completely, it's not really economically a smart idea, because if we were to stop any of those things, we'd have car crashes all the time, or we'd have people not getting to work, or if pesticides were stopped, we'd have a lot less food to feed people, and people in poorer communities wouldn't be able to afford the food because a lot of that stuff's more expensive. And so we look at the things that are happening to our freshwater ecosystems and kind of publish the papers so that people can understand them, and then we hope that the people in charge look at what we're doing and make good calls on the stuff.
So do you think there's any way to kind of gradually get to these goals that we might set for ourselves, like, you know, reduction in pesticides and reduction in use of fossil fuels?
Yeah. So a lot of things are just like smart application. So with pesticides, just don't apply it next to a lake. And then with road salt, they're doing a lot of stuff where they are reducing the amount of road salt they're applying. They're using different types of road salts, and they're using smart plowing so that they don't have to use as much road salts. So overall, it's just like, use less of it and be smart about how you, when you do use it.
Right. That's probably good for everybody to remember. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, you've been really studying these freshwater systems and ecosystems. Why is this important to us? Sort of as a big generalized question.
Yeah. So of all the water in the whole entire world, only 2.5% of that is actually freshwater. And of that 2.5%, 0.01% of that is actually easily usable. So a lot of it's locked up in like your glaciers and your snow caps and stuff. And so that's where we get everything from our drinking water, our agricultural uses, our recreation like swimming and boating, our fishing. And it's a really big part of like how we survive, but also it holds about 6% of the species. So 0.01% of water, but 6% of the species. And so it's kind of not proportional, and it's super important. And it's also really threatened because of all the things that we're doing around it. And so we want to understand how can we help the environment survive long and well, but also how can we keep using these into the future as well.
So this also probably affects like things like floods and you know, how we might develop flood protection mm-hmm. with our waterways. And can you describe maybe some ways that we can better use our waterways for things like that?
Yeah, a little bit. So a lot of the stuff I'm familiar with is more so related to like your oceans and stuff. Like, for example, when you normally have those wetlands, those marshes, or those like mangrove areas, when hurricanes hit, that normally buffers a huge impact from that. A lot of times what they see is when you develop all that land, you rip all that out, that's when you get the catastrophic flooding and stuff. Water doesn't sink through cement very well. And so you normally have quite a bit of standing water around, and versus if it was like a normal freshwater ecosystem, you'd have a lot of that being absorbed or buffered from the impacts. And it's similar in like lakes and stuff with the wetlands and stuff around there as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. So when you're looking at all of these freshwater samples, what kind of species are you finding in there, and how do the ecosystems actually work? Because I don't really know much about that.
Yeah, so the number one thing we're probably finding are the thing that nobody sees, and that's the little zooplankton that are swimming all around you. They're the littlest guy in there, but the most important. So they're the ones that are eating the algae and keeping our water clean and safe.
And how big are they?
A millimeter, maybe. Mm. They get even smaller than that. Like sometimes you can't even see them with a microscope. But they can get as big as a quarter or so. So those guys are pretty important. There's hundreds of species of those. And then there's also, you have all your mollusks, which are your clams, your mussels. And you have your fish species that everybody likes to catch and eat. And then there's also the whole above water habitat that includes like your birds and your rodents and stuff like that living around.
Hmm. What are some invasive species that have been found in Lake George?
So currently Lake George has the Eurasian milfoil. That's probably one of the most common ones. That it's a plant that is pretty hardy. It can survive quite a bit. They have some Asian clams here and there. There's little pockets of them. Fortunately, they haven't had a really big infestation of the zebra mussel, unlike the Hudson River, because their calcium's a little too low for the zebra mussels to survive. But Lake George is one of the better lakes around here compared to like Lake Champlain, which has a lot of traffic, and I think they're up to a couple, maybe 30 to 50 invasive species or something like that at this point. Wow.
And people still use Lake George as their source of drinking water, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And yep.
Very cool. So you have been doing all of this work, and now you're beginning to work this year specifically with Nature Lab. What do you think of Nature Lab, and what are you trying to do with that?
Yeah, so I think Nature Lab's a great opportunity to kind of get what scientists are doing in the lab and other people in other fields to the public, because I think the public often thinks of scientists as these boring people that just sit in the lab and study a whole bunch of stuff, and we aren't really approachable and stuff. But I think we can use Nature Lab as a way to communicate with the public and inform them about what we're doing and about what they can do to help out as well.
And what about building a lab specifically for the community?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's important?
Oh yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think if you can get people like K-12, like younger kids involved, they're going to want to go into science when they eventually graduate high school and go to college and stuff. And then if you can get people like that are older, they can find interest as well and start enjoying science too.
So this has become a passion of yours, like communicating science in mm-hmm. a way, which is not beyond the specifics of your PhD.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the Jefferson Project, we interact a lot with the public because we're out on boats and people are like, what are you guys doing over there? And so we have to communicate with them. But most of the time we're out in the lab and doing the dirty work and doing all the experiments and stuff and don't really communicate as much with people.
So that's great. Thanks for spreading the really good word for Nature Lab and sharing the work that you're doing with the Jefferson Project with all of us. Thanks for this interview, too.
Yep, you're welcome.